Tonight on Old Time Radio Drama, Hopalong Cassidy, Phil Harris and Alice Faye from 1949, the NBC University Theater with Joseph Conrad's classic The Heart of Darkness, and Quiet Please from 1948 with a haunting little speculation called How Beautiful Upon the Mountain. I'm Norman Gilliland, and we're going to start with the winning entries in the 2007 Soundwaves Wisconsin Youth Radio Festival. And later on, I'll tell you how you can enter your class in next year's festival. Well, for most of us, it's good news to hear that there's going to be a new park. But what about the families that have to give up their homes for that park? Our first drama is about one such family. Students in Ms. Perrin's fifth grade class at Gordon L. Wilson Elementary School in Baraboo won the prize for best adaptation with this play, Grandpa Jake's Fight.
Grandpa Jake's Fight. Sarah, an 11-year-old girl, is visiting her grandparents in Virginia's Blue Ridge Mountains. As she is sitting in their kitchen, watching Grandma making dinner, she is daydreaming about all her memories of her summers at Grandma and Grandpa's.
Wake up, honey. What are you daydreaming about?
I wish I could live here in the country forever. Grandpa, could you please pass me the butter?
Sure thing, Sarah.
Oh, no, Sarah. Think how much you would miss your mommy and daddy.
Right here in this mountain is the best possible place to live. I was born here and I intend to die here. Pass me the chicken, please. We work hard and we don't owe anything. No matter what happens, in this depression, we'll be fine.
Now, Jake, I'm sure Sarah doesn't want to talk about the depression.
Sarah stared down at her plate. She didn't even want to think about it.
I don't even want to remember the months and months Dad was out of work. Every day, Dad would go out looking for work. When he come home, we'd all look real hopeful at him, thinking he got a job. But he'd just come home, empty face, saying nothing today either. And then, we had no money, so we had to move to a smaller apartment and change schools. But worse, I had to make new friends.
But your dad did get a new job.
Yeah, but he works all night and sleeps during the day. I barely get to see him.
No, buddy, I think it's important for Sarah to know that we're safe from the depression here. We can't lose the house or the store because there's no mortgage on either one of them. And we'll always have plenty to eat because of your garden and flock of chickens. The future looks pretty good to me.
To me, too. Now that I'm here, I feel real safe.
The next day, Sarah wakes up to Grandma's crowing rooster and the smell of bacon frying.
Good morning, sunshine. What are you going to do today?
Everything. I'm going to do everything I always do here. First, I'll help you make pies for lunch. Then, I'll walk up the road to see Kate and Luann.
My Lord, what's Grandpa up to?
It was mid-afternoon before Grandpa's old Dodge turned off the road and entered the driveway.
Jake, where were you going in such a hurry?
I went into town now because I got a letter from the National Park Service saying that there will be a national park in the mountains.
Dear me, you don't say.
They want city people from all over the east to come and enjoy nature.
Are you and Grandma going to have to move?
They want to take the farm of every man here, and they want to take this place too. When I was in town just now, I saw the map. All of the houses from the old road to the mill on across the mountains are on land they want to take for the new park, for Shenandoah National Park.
Grandma slipped a comforting arm around Sarah's waist.
You can sit here and take this, but I'm not going down without a fight. I'm a Virginian and an American, and I've got the Declaration of Independence and the United States Constitution behind me.
Grandpa begins his fight to save his land. He writes letters to the National Park Service saying that his land should not be included in the Shenandoah National Park.
Did you get a letter from the Park Service people today, Grandpa?
No, not yet, honey.
He also puts up signs all around his land saying that people working with the National Park Service can't go to his store or his lunchroom. Hey, read this sign. Park Service employees, beware of flying objects. They may be bullets. Grandpa Jake is written up in the local newspapers.
Look, here's another article about that crazy man who's writing all those letters against Shenandoah National Park and all the things he's trying to do to stop the park from being built on his land.
Later on in the summer, Sarah is at the county fair with her cousin Amanda. Standing in line for ice cream, she overhears two men talking to each other.
Letter to the editor in last week's paper. It was from the man who runs the store out where the road crosses the mountain. I don't recall the name.
That would be Jake Griffin. What did he have to say?
A lot of crazy ideas for how the people could keep the government from taking over their land. He even said that everybody up on the mountain should chip in so they can hire themselves a lawyer.
Amanda, how dare they talk like that about Grandpa?
That's so rude. You're next, Sarah. I want chocolate.
Grandpa Jake begins to campaign and goes door to door to his neighbors to enlist their support against the national park.
Good day, Sam.
What do you want, Jake?
I'm fighting the government, and I want you on my team.
Give it up, Jake. You ain't gonna win this battle. The government will just take it away. Forget about it. And furthermore, I don't want your granddaughter coming over to see my daughters. In spite of his efforts, Grandpa Jake is forced to move when Sheriff Holmes comes and gives him an ultimatum saying,
Jake, either you move or your house will be forcibly taken from you. Park workers will remove your household items and your house will be burned.
Grandpa Jake and Grandma Betty did move out and stayed with their daughter Rose. While Grandpa was upset and depressed over the forced move, Aunt Rose and Sarah found a new place for them to move into. Sarah left to go back home with a smile on her face, knowing that she will still be able to come back next summer. This radio show was written and produced by LAMP students of Miss Perrin's 5th grade class at Gordon L. Wilson Elementary School, Baraboo, Wisconsin. This program is an adaptation of the book Grandpa's Mountain by Carolyn Reeder. Narrator, Man, Man Number Two, and Sam were played by Sam Anstett.
Sarah and Woman were played by Alexandra Lawrence.
Grandma Betty and Amanda were played by Rain Deco.
Grandpa Jake, Man One, and Sheriff were played by Tanner Craker.
That was the first of our four winning entries in the 2007 Soundwaves Wisconsin Youth Radio Festival. And now here's how your class can participate in next year's festival. The Soundwaves Youth Radio Festival is open to Wisconsin school children in grades 3 through 12 with adult sponsorship. And there are categories in creating a radio drama, documentary, interview, or public service announcement. Entries for the 2008 competition are accepted through January of 2008. And for detailed information, visit this website. It's www.ecb.org/soundwaves. That's www.ecb.org/soundwaves for detailed information. Now to our second winning entry. It's in the interview category, and it comes from Rhinelander High School and producer Nicole Polkowski. This is the original entry, and it's called Schizophrenia.
The illness we now know as schizophrenia has been a source of confusion throughout history. People suffering from this disease were once thought to be possessed by demons and were feared, tormented, killed, or locked up forever. Although there have been many advances through the years in the understanding of its causes, course, and treatments, schizophrenia still puzzles both health professionals and society. The average person finds it easier to cope with the idea of cancer than the odd behavior, hallucinations, or strange ideas of a person with schizophrenia. I will be interviewing my dad, Dave Polkowski, about his brother Andy, who is a schizophrenic. Hopefully this interview will show that schizophrenia is not something to be feared, but rather something to be confronted as any other common illness. Now I'd like to introduce my father, David Polkowski. I will be asking him some questions about his brother Andy, who is schizophrenic. Hi, Dad.
Hi, Nicole.
My first question is, when was your brother first diagnosed with schizophrenia?
My brother Andrew was diagnosed about a year after his high school graduation. A lot of the details are sketchy because it's been 30 years now. But I remember he was in a car accident, which he rolled his car in a cornfield, and he crawled out of it, and he was banged up really bad. And he walked to a farmer's house, and for some reason, he was laughing a lot, and the farmer called my dad, and my dad went out and got him and brought him home. And for several weeks afterwards, well, his injuries healed. His face was pretty banged up, and one of his eyes was swollen shut. He acted pretty much normal, but kind of more introverted than usual. And once his injuries healed up, he still acted like his eye was still black and blue and swollen, because he'd wear a patch over that eye, or when he didn't have the patch on, he'd just kind of keep it closed, and he didn't make a lot of sense when he could get him to talk. And he dressed different, and he didn't hang around with his friends. He had a hard time getting out of bed in the morning, so he wouldn't make it to work, and finally he got fired from his job. And then my folks took him to the clinic for a checkup, and they initially thought his nerves were shot. And they put him on some kind of medication for a while, which just kind of calmed him down, but didn't really help. So that was probably the start of it. He was probably 19.
How did your household feel about it, and did anything change in your home life?
Yeah, there was a lot of changes, because no one really understood what schizophrenia was once he was finally diagnosed with that. A lot of times he would act perfectly normal, and the other days he'd be totally bizarre. And so it seemed like he was putting on an act a lot of times. And me being a younger brother, I didn't really understand why he was acting this way, and I didn't really understand any of the disease. And my folks were pretty much in the same boat, but they did start reading some books on it and learned a lot more about it, and finally got on some medication that helped.
How did your brother handle it, and how did it affect the rest of his life?
Well, there was periods of time when he handled it pretty well, usually when he was on his medications, and then there was other times when he didn't handle it well, and he wouldn't take his medications because he would start to feel better and he would think he didn't need the medication, and he would self-medicate with either alcohol or marijuana or cocaine. And It was like a roller coaster ride that eventually ended in his death.
Did he have trouble keeping a job or keeping relationships with other people?
Yes, he had a lot of trouble with work. He couldn't concentrate long enough to stay on a job. He could work for an hour or two if he needed a hand doing something, and he's always willing to help out. But as far as going to a job 8 to 5 in the afternoon, he could never do that. When Andy would take his medication, you could talk to him, and he wasn't so argumentative. But when he wasn't taking his medication, you couldn't talk any sense to him at all. He'd talk about the Hell's Henchmen in the square and whatever, you know. He just couldn't carry a conversation because he was being bombarded by all the noises around him. You know, if there's a TV going or traffic, he'd hear all that. Plus, he'd hear voices. And if you were trying to talk to him, it was just like more noise is the way it was explained to me. So he had a hard time concentrating enough to get along with anybody when he wasn't taking his meds. He had several relationships. He met a gal and had a daughter, but she was substance abuser also, and that kind of just fed into their addictions together. But he was with that gal for quite a while. He had several friends that he'd hung out with, but they were all kind of, they'd come around it when he got his paycheck or his Social Security check, and when he had money to buy beer and whatever else they wanted to use, and then he wouldn't see him after the money was gone. So, well, I'm glad I could answer some of your questions. I haven't thought about it in a long time, and it's a very emotional illness for a family to deal with.
Okay. Thank you for talking with me, Dad. After taking this interview, I have learned some very important things about schizophrenia. First, you have to be able to understand the illness so you can fight with the best of your abilities. You also have to want to overcome schizophrenia, otherwise you won't be able to. And most importantly, you need friends and family because they can support you during hard times. If these important factors are put into effect with every schizophrenia case, then we can strive to give people with schizophrenia a brighter outlook on their futures.
That was the winning entry in the interview category for the 2007 Soundwaves Wisconsin Youth Radio Festival. There's also a category for public service announcements, and this is Aaron Robinson's fifth grade choir class in Holman, Wisconsin, has produced a spectacular PSA using a Liberian folk melody, and I'm going to give you the cast list before we hear that PSA. They are Miranda Pankow, Savannah Britton, Elise Pataska, Gao Su Yang, Emily Zhang, Kelly O'Loughlin, Jordan Mason, Hannah Town, Adria Peters, Taylor Kopecki, Kira Jansky, Kimberly Sesvold, Seth Welvert, Caitlin Schrader, Kelly Scare, Shai Bratasher, Kayla Lichthart, Dakota Testa, Allison Happel, and Sue Yang. Are you ready? This is Cough in Your Sleeve. there you have it. Cough in Your Sleeve with a large all-star cast. Our PSA winner in this year's Soundwaves Festival. A crummy meal and a lumpy bed are enough to put some people out of sorts, unless they find out that things could be a lot worse. And that's the premise, with a little time travel thrown in, of our winner in the original drama category, which comes from Miss Conley's and Mr. Ellis's fifth grade students at Gordon L. Wilson Elementary School in Baraboo, Wisconsin. It's called The Mayflower Misfits.
The Mayflower Misfits. The three Jones children, Claire, Keeley, and Allie, walk through the back door, into the kitchen, grumbling unhappily. Their mother is busy with dinner.
Did you have a good day, girls?
We have to write this dumb report. D-U-M, dumb.
It's D-U-M-B, Claire. Yeah, and by the way, Mom, it's about our ancestors.
Hey, everybody, I'm home.
Hey, Dad.
Hey, what's up, kiddos? You don't look too happy.
The children aren't happy because they have to write a report on their ancestors.
Hey, that's great. Did I ever tell you that our ancestors were on the Mayflower?
Yes, Dad, about 50 million times.
Speaking of time, it's time for dinner. I hope you like it.
Enough of your lame puns, Mom.
Green bean casserole again.
Ew!
It's a healthy, nutritious, and nourishing food for small, growing bodies, as your father would say.
Hey, that was good, hon. So, what else is new?
What's new? I'll tell you what's new. The toilet's backed up, the TV's broken.
My poor, poor GameCube! It's broken!
Our house is terrible, the food is terrible, the beds are lumpy.
We can't live like this!
Enough! Now, about this report. Come downstairs. I have to show you something. It might change your mind about things. What do you think of my new invention, girls?
What is it?
In front of them stood a large red telephone booth with antennas and a big clock with many buttons and sparkling lights.
It's a time-traveling booth. Climb on in, girls. Get ready for a wild journey in time. And take this, too. It will help you out when you're ready to come back to your horrible life in 2007.
A poem. Right, Dad.
That's weird. Why a poem? Why not a paragraph?
Just shut up.
Okay, I'll just put this in my pocket.
Dad, why don't we go to the Mayflower to help us with our dumb report?
Great idea, Claire. Gordon, I'll set the date, October 11, 1620. See you later.
What's going on?
Where are we?
Dad said we were going to the Mayflower, so that must be where we are.
All the pilgrims aboard the Mayflower are staring at the strangely dressed children before them.
Hi, how's it going?
Thou art going to Captain Jones right away.
Aye, aye, hurry along now.
But what do we do?
What did thou doeth? Thou snuck on our ship. Thou art stowaways.
No, we're not.
Captain, Captain, we have stowaways.
Stowaways, eh?
No way. We're your great, great, great...
Keely, just shut up.
Okay.
Lassies, hold thy tongues. Since thou art stowaways, thou shalt be given chores. Maid, come here now and give these lassies their chores.
Aye, sir. Shall we have them empty the slop buckets? And since thou art stowaways, thou shalt clean up the wounds of the injured and clean up after the sick.
Ew!
Silence, lassies! Be on with your chores.
You think that's bad? I had to clean up after the sick people.
Speaking of sick people, I feel a little seasick myself.
Maybe you'll feel better after a little something to eat.
It is time to partake of some nourishment for thy weak bodies.
Placed before the children was their dinner of hardtack rolls, salted meat, and ale to wash it all down.
Ew!
Hush, young lassies, and bow thy heads a blessing. O Lord, our God and Heavenly Father, which of thy unspeakable mercy toward us hath provided meat and drink for the nourishment of our weak bodies. Through Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. Amen.
After working past their gag reflex, the three girls were able to choke down their food. When their meal was done, the girls prepared for bed. They were led to what looked like wooden shelves.
You've got to be kidding me. I'd rather sleep in my lumpy bed than these disgusting things.
And look at these scrappy rags for blankets.
The girls finally got into bed. The harsh rocking of the boat prevented them from sleeping.
What's going on?
Everyone stay where thou art. Thou all must remain calm.
Wait a second. Remember Miss Conley's history lesson when she told us about the storm that hit the Mayflower and caused the decking to crack? We've got to get out of here.
Let's go!
The girls make their way to the lowest part of the ship.
What's that noise?
I hear it too.
So do I.
I think it's singing, and it sounds like it's coming from in there.
The girls see a closed door in front of them and open it. Before them, a little pilgrim girl was scrubbing the floor and singing.
When the waves go up and down, when the water whirls around, you'll know it's time to go, so look down below.
Keely, can I see that poem Dad gave you?
Sure.
Hey, she's singing the poem Dad gave us.
The pilgrim girl suddenly turns into the time machine. The girls were amazed. Their jaws dropped and their eyes opened wide.
Wow.
Let's get in and go home.
The girls get into the time machine, type in October 11th, 2007, and zoom back home.
So, girls, how was your trip?
We're so glad to be back.
Lumpy beds rock.
Girls, your green bean casserole is still waiting for you.
Yes!
This program was written and produced by Miss Conley's and Mr. Ellis's fifth grade LAMP students at Gordon L. Wilson Elementary School, Baraboo, Wisconsin. Narrator, mother, and female pilgrim were played by Sabrina Fuller. Keely Jones and singing pilgrim girl were played by Morgan Milbrick. Claire Jones was played by Alex Schwartz. Allie Jones was played by Julia Baird. Father, male pilgrim, and Captain Jones were played by Ian Krasanik.
That green bean casserole might not be so bad after all. That's the message from the Mayflower Misfits, the last of this year's four winning entries in the Soundwaves Wisconsin Youth Radio Festival. Congratulations to all of our winners, and thanks to all of our contestants. And remember that you can find out how to enter next year's festival by going to this website. It's www.ecb.org/soundwaves. Next stop, Hopalong Cassidy, as old-time radio drama continues here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tonight, Hoppy and his neighbors are all 100 head short, and it looks like a range war is looming between the cattlemen and the homesteaders. How is it going to play out? Well, we'll find out in this story called Range War from May 21st, 1950.
It's Hopalong Cassidy. With action and suspense, out of the Old West comes the most famous hero of them all, Hopalong Cassidy, starring William Boyd. The Ring of the Silver Spurs heralds the most amazing man ever to ride the prairies of the early West, Hopalong Cassidy. This famous hero thrills his 60 million fans with action and dangerous adventure. In the role of Hopalong Cassidy is the popular star of the motion picture series, William Boyd. And appearing as that laughable old character, California, is Andy Clyde. Now to our story, Range War. The rolling green range north of the Bar 20 had a look apiece about it as Hopalong Cassidy guided his white horse along the cottonwood bottom toward Cy Ottoman's ranch house. It was the time of year that usually brought peace and contentment to Hoppy and the Bar 20 gang, but this year it was different. There was a worried look on Hoppy's face as he hitched Topper to the rail and walked up to Cy Ottoman's door.
Cy, you in there?
Ah, Cassidy.
Morning, Cy.
Morning. What's on your mind?
Well, I might be able to talk better sitting down.
Oh, sure. Come in. Here's a chair over there.
Thanks. Ah, that's better. Ah, tell me, Cy, how's your spring roundup coming?
Wound her up yesterday.
Your tally's all in?
Yep. Why?
Well, let me see. How do I do this diplomatically?
What kind of a scheme you cooking up this time?
Cy, I know you're still hot under the collar about that deal I put over last
fall. Oh, but... hogwash. I was a darn fool. You got to the man with the money first with them Bar 20 cars. It ain't that that I'm hot about, Cassidy. It's something else.
What's that, Cy?
I'm beginning to think you got some mighty ambitious line riders.
Meaning what?
Meaning about 100 head of my stock didn't answer for roll call at my roundup. I reckon they strayed too close to the Bar 20 line.
You know, that's interesting.
You denying it?
I sure am. That's why I'm here.
Huh?
We're short 100 head, too. I thought they might have showed up on your tally.
Oh. Well, what do you reckon it could... Oh, wait a minute. Come in.
Morning, Cy.
And hop along, Cassidy. Just the gents I want to see.
Well, how are you, Jess?
Hi, Jess.
Didn't expect to see you two sitting down over the peace pipe, especially since that little deal last fall.
Never mind last fall, Jess Hendricks. It's over and done with. Oh, Lordy. What did you fall into?
Cattle dip. I know I smelled a high heaven. My clothes are clean soaked with it.
Ain't no one else dipping, I know.
Just picked up a bunch of steers from Texas, and I ain't taking chances with Texas fever in my herd. I'm glad you brought up the subject of cattle, Cy, because that's why I come. Just got my final tally sheets and...
And you're short 100 head.
Oh, you got him, Cassidy. I knew them darn critters straight onto somebody's range.
Wait a minute. I haven't got them, Jess.
Huh? Then how did you know
about
them?
Because Cy and I came up short, too.
100 head apiece?
More or less.
Mm-hmm.
I guess there's only one answer to that one.
Rustlers?
Yeah.
Here's them nesters, that's who it is.
The Sweetwater Valley?
Sure, there weren't no rustling around here before the valley was open to homesteaders, was there?
Now, wait a shake, Jess. Don't jump to conclusions.
Well, what do you aim to do?
Well, let's keep it quiet for a few days. Snoop around a little before we start any rustler talk.
By Joe, if it is them nested devils, I'll show them a new use for a long rope.
And I don't think you'll be alone, Cy. The nesters over at Sweetwater Valley have gone in for rustling. I think this county's in for a first-class range war. A week has passed since Hoppy called at Cy Ottoman's ranch house, a week that has seen rumors and muttered hints. And the rustler talk swept through the section like a prairie fire, all of it directed at the nesters, the homestead and small ranchers of Sweetwater Valley. It was all suspicion, though, at least until a young nester named Bert Larrimore called at the office of Henry Weatherby at the State Bank in Sweetwater.
50, 75, 100, 2... 3, 4, 5. How's that look to you, Mr. Weatherby?
Looks like cash money, Bert.
I expect we'll be having a little celebration tonight, eh? Burning that mortgage.
Yeah. Would I be too nosy if I inquired about...
You mean, where'd I get the money? No, I'll be glad to tell you, Henry. Aunt of mine in New Jersey. She passed away a few weeks ago. She left it to me.
I see.
Does that answer your question, Mr. Weatherby?
Yeah. Yeah, Bert, I suppose it does.
$500 cash?
Well, that's right, Hoppy.
Well, I don't know, Johnny. Maybe Bert Larimore did have an aunt, at least.
Well, Weatherby checked it. Only relatives he has are a couple of cousins in San Francisco. 6 months ago, Larimore didn't have a dime to his name.
How do you know?
Well, I had a pretty good reason, Hoppy.
And what's that?
A small matter of $50 he stole from me to cover a bet he made at the North Fork Saloon one night.
So now it comes out. That's why you...
Yeah, that's why I broke up with his sister.
I see.
The stockmen are ready to move right now.
Well, they're crazy.
Maybe. But all they needed was that Larimore thing.
What kind of evidence is that? So unless they get rich, does that mean that every homesteader in Sweetwater Valley is rustling cattle?
The stockmen seem to think so, and it's good enough for me.
Well, I'm short as many head as they are, and I don't think so. And you better not think so either, Johnny, until we got proof. Well, maybe I'd better remind you about that little mix-up we had when you first came to the Bar 20. When that batch of self-righteous gunslingers came out here ready to lynch you for something you had nothing to do with. Just because you'd done a spell in prison.
Well, I...
Well, what?
I'm wrong, Hoppy. I know it. But all that talk in town kind of gets under a fellow's skin.
Yeah, I suppose it does. But there are two sides to the rustling business, Johnny. First you got to steal them, then you got to sell them. I've had California out checking every shipping yard from Council City to Alderville, looking for blotched brands. There hasn't been a suspicious critter shipped out of this country for a year. Larimore got his money from stolen cows. Where'd he sell them?
Well, that's something to think about, all right. Well, I'm with you, Hoppy. Well, we better speak our piece because they're not going to hold off much longer.
Come on, let's saddle up.
Where are we going?
I want to ride into North Fork and take a look around. And on the way, we can stop in at Larimore's. Maybe you can give us some more details on that aunt of his in New Jersey. You go on in, Johnny. Topper's got a loose hind shoe. I want to take a look at it.
Okay. We staying here?
No. Tell him we're riding on into North Fork tonight.
That suits me.
Johnny McIver.
Hello, Marcella.
Come on in, Johnny.
Thanks. Hoppy will be along in a minute.
This is quite a surprise.
Yeah. Bert in?
He's been staying in North Fork for the last few days.
Oh.
You're looking fine, Johnny.
Well, I was going to say the same about you. You're still as pretty as ever.
Thanks.
I guess I didn't keep my promise. I said I wouldn't bother you anymore. I mean after that business with Bert.
I'd like to forget that, Johnny.
Well, so would I. Marcella, do you reckon we...
Yes, Johnny?
Oh, that's Hoppy.
I'm going to have to take Topper to the blacksmith in town. Evening, Miss Larimore.
Mr. Cassidy.
Bert's in town.
Oh, well, I guess we'd better be riding along then.
What did you want to see him about?
Oh, Hoppy, let's not...
I think she has a right to know, Johnny.
What is it?
It's about that money Bert paid off your mortgage with.
I see.
Now, listen, Marcella.
It seems we always get around to money, doesn't it? What business is it of yours that Bert has some luck and pays off the mortgage?
That's a good question, and I'll answer it. There are a lot of ranchers around here who like to jump to conclusions when a nester shows up with money he can't account for. Especially when every ranch in this district is short on their cattle tallies.
So that's it. You think he's a rustler?
I'm only telling you what the rest of them think.
Where'd he get that money, Marcella?
He said he made a business deal in the East.
You believe him?
Of course I believe him. I guess I was wrong about you, Johnny. Oh, I wish I knew why you hate him. I wish I knew why you won't stop until you've ruined him.
Listen to me, Marcella.
Wait a minute, Johnny. Miss Larimore, whether you know it or not, we're hanging on the ragged edge of a cattle war around here.
Of course I know it. Every homesteader in the valley scared to death, putting up barricades around ranch houses, waiting for a bunch of your murdering cattlemen to ride up.
Now, let me finish.
I've heard all I want to hear. You're tickled to death about this rustling business because it gives you a handy reason to shoot up Sweetwater Valley and run us out of here.
All right. You want to know the one way we can stop it?
We?
Yes, we. Johnny and I are fighting it just as hard as you are. There's only one way to stop this thing before it blows up in our faces. Before you and Bert and a lot of innocent people get hurt.
Go on.
There won't be any range war if we take the excuse away. We prove there's nothing wrong with the money Bert turned up with. And if we run down the thief who's got those cattle. And believe me, Miss Larimore, that's the only way we can stop it. That's the blacksmith shop over there.
Oh, he's closed up for the night.
Nah, he sleeps in the back. Let's ride around the back entrance, see if we can get him up. We might be riding back to Bar 20 tonight, and I don't want a lame horse on my hands. Pull up, Johnny.
What is it?
Look. Over there by the back window.
Where? Oh. Oh, yeah.
He's lighting a cigarette.
Did you get a look at his face?
That's funny. Wonder what he's doing in town.
Who?
Smoke Bledsoe. He used to run a profitable business down in Texas.
What do you mean?
Killing people.
Oh.
He's a professional gunman. We'll wait till he's gone, and I want to take a look inside that blacksmith shop.
Maybe we better take the door off its hinges.
I'll put the bar in deeper. I think we can pry it off.
Okay.
Here, I'll give you a hand.
Right.
There she goes. Now, let's see what Mr. Bledsoe was up to.
Huh? Look.
Yeah?
Is he?
Yeah, he's dead. Bledsoe doesn't walk away from him until he's sure of that.
Let me light a match.
Careful. Hold it down. That's it.
Look. Under the desk there, those papers.
Yeah.
What is it?
Circle H, Sunflower, Lazy C, Flying O.
Brands?
Yeah, drawings of brands. And a funny thing.
What's that?
Every brand here belongs to a nester in Sweetwater Valley. I think our friend on the floor there made up an order of branding irons. Then someone thought he might talk too much. So he had Bledsoe nail him through that window there.
Oh, better get the sheriff, huh?
Not yet.
Well, what about Bledsoe?
We can get him later. I want to give Mr. Bledsoe a free rein right now. You never can tell, Johnny. He just might lead us to the man he's working for.
It's almost midnight now as Hoppy mounts the stairs of the rickety North Fork Hotel and walks down the hallway into a room full of angry cattlemen.
Now, wait a minute. Now, here's the figures, everybody. Now, near as I can calculate, there's over 1,000 head missing.
1,000 head?
Now, wait a minute. Now, the question is, what can we do about it?
Just a minute, boys.
Hoppy.
I'd like to stick my oar in, if you don't mind, being a paid-up member of the Cattlemen's Association. I think you're all going off half-cocked.
No, wait.
What do you mean?
Wars are pretty much alike. Well, they're cattle wars of the big kind. I don't like to see rangeland fenced off any more than you do.
Well?
But those nesters in Sweetwater Valley have a legal right to that land until someone proves a charge against them.
Oh, well, listen. Now, wait a minute, Hoppy.
Oh, hello, Jess.
Boys, I just got here in time to hear what Cassidy said. I want you to know I felt the same way until a few minutes ago. You want proof, Hoppy. I've got it for you.
All right, Jess.
I want you all to show up at my ranch house tomorrow night at 8 and come ready for a fight.
What is it, Jess?
A little bird I found, Hoppy. A little bird that's going to sing for the boys when I tell him to.
I'll be ready to listen.
I don't think you'll be disappointed. All right, Si, let's get on with it.
You bet.
If the shooting's going to start tomorrow night, we've got some planning to do.
All right, Hoppy.
Hello, Larimore.
Huh? Oh. Johnny McIver.
Mind if I have a drink with you?
Yeah. I mean, no, not at all. Not at all, Johnny. Here, let me buy you one, eh?
Well, times have changed, huh? Last time I saw you, you didn't have the price of a small buttermilk.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a little luck, Johnny, a little luck. Sam, bring me a couple more of these, will you? Nice to see you again, Johnny. Nice to see you again.
Thanks. You're looking a little thin, Bert.
Huh?
Something bothering you?
Oh, no. No, things are going great, Johnny, going great. No. No, take part of that back. Something has been bothering me. One thing.
What's that?
This.
Well, $50.
Look, let's say I borrowed it, eh? And here's five more for interest.
Well, I don't know if I should.
Go ahead. Take it. Oh, here's the drinks. Now, oh, here's to you, Johnny.
Same to you, Bert. Thanks, Bert. Uh-oh.
What is it?
A friend of mine waiting outside. So long, Bert. Take care of yourself. What is it, Hoppy?
Meeting just broke up. The shooting starts tomorrow night.
Where's that leave us?
I don't know. What about Larimore?
Oh, I was just starting to work on him when you gave me the sign. Look.
$50.
Told me he was paying off his loan. What's the matter?
Smell that bill.
Cattle dip. Wait a minute.
Yeah, me too. Only one ranch around here is using cattle dip right now.
Jess Hendricks. But why is he paying Larimore? Why is he...
Wait, around the corner.
What is it?
It's Hendricks. Get into the alley.
Larimore.
What is it, Jess? What do you want?
Take it easy.
Is it
yeah,
all...
it's all set. You're going to sing your solo tomorrow night at my place. Loud and long. Be sure you got it note for note.
Listen, Hendricks, I'm getting scared. They'll kill me.
There's no easier way of making $15,000, sonny. You'll have to take your chances. Bledsoe's here, and he'll hustle you out of the state before the nurses know what happened.
Okay, Jess.
You better run on home now and practice.
Yeah.
Double-crossing little snake. He'll get paid off, all right. Smoke!
Yeah?
You saw Larimore, all right?
Yeah.
Got him tagged?
Like he was already on a marble slab.
Tomorrow night at my place. I'll sit him at the right-hand window on the east side of the house, right?
Yeah.
Remember, the red lamp...
The red lamp.
And don't miss.
I ain't likely to. I ain't missed for 20 years.
Good. I'm counting on you. I'll go with you as far as the corner. Then remember, I don't want to be seen with you from now on.
I got you.
Now get this straight. Don't want any slip-ups. We do everything just as we can.
Phew. That was quite a scene.
Yeah, Judas and the 20 pieces of silver.
Huh?
Never mind. I guess Larimore was just practicing when he stole your $50, Johnny. Now he's selling out every rancher in the valley.
Hmm. What was that business about the red lamp?
I don't know. I suppose we'll have to go to the meeting tomorrow night to find out.
All right, boys, I promised fireworks tonight, and I've brought them.
Johnny.
Yeah?
Sneak around the back of the crowd and keep your hand on your gun.
Gotcha.
All right, well, come on, well, let's have
what's
it.
Up, then, yes, huh? All right, here she is.
Hey, what's that paper you got there?
This piece of paper here accounts for your missing cattle. It's a signed confession involving every nester in Sweetwater Valley.
What a signed confession in the nester?
The man who signed it knows his life ain't worth a dime, but he agreed to come here when I promised him we'd see to it he got across the state line safe. Come on in, Larimore.
Why, Bert Larimore.
Sit down in that chair there next to the window.
Okay, Jess. Okay.
Now, I'm not going into details tonight, Larimore. What these men are interested in is, First, what happened to the cattle?
Well, it's in the statement there. We run them up through Winchester Pass onto Boulder Flat. You'll find them there.
What about the brands?
We watched them. Put on our own marks.
I see. Who's we?
Me. Rest of the nesters.
How many of them?
All of them.
Can you prove that, Larimer?
I don't have to. Look at the cattle. The brands will tell you who's in on it. We're planning to run them up north next month. Ship them out of Montana.
Well, you fellas need any more proof before we leave?
Yeah, Jess, I do.
What do you mean?
Okay, Cassidy. If you want to ask the boys some questions, go ahead.
Thanks.
Light's kind of bad in here. First, let me move this lamp over here by the window.
Go ahead.
Lamp. Wait, the red lamp.
Jess.
Yeah?
Wait a minute.
Just moving the lamp here.
Never mind the lamp. The light's good enough.
What's the matter, Hoppy? Got the jitters?
Yeah, and I don't want to question the boy. I want to question you.
Me? What are you leaving?
Only take a minute, Jess. Since we seem to be using this chair by the window as a witness stand, why don't you sit in it? Go on, Bert. Give him your seat.
Listen, Cassidy, I ain't no mood for...
What's the matter, Jess? You scared or something?
Shut up, Si.
Jess, I'm asking you to sit down in that chair.
I'll answer any questions from here.
The next one will come closer. Sit in that chair.
I don't get you.
Keep your seats, everybody. You're supposed to be after the truth. So am I. If you give me 2 minutes, I'll get it for you.
Jess, I think you better do what Hoppy says.
Okay. I'll sit in the chair.
Make yourself comfortable, Jess.
I'm comfortable. Go ahead.
All right. First off, I'll tell you that Larimore's confession is all right. Except for one thing.
What's that?
It's a lie.
What do you mean, Hoppy?
That's simple enough. Jess has a connection in the state capital. Sweetwater Valley is his if he can get the nesters out. Johnny and I uncovered that one this afternoon.
You can prove that, Chastity?
We won't have to.
Why not?
You are going to confess to it.
Confess to it?
So, to get on with the story, Jess figured the best way to get the nesters out would be to start a range war.
Range war?
He hired a bunch of thugs from out of the state and ran off our cattle just before a roundup. He went to the blacksmith in town and had him make duplicates of every brand along the Sweetwater and marked the cows after he got them up to Boulder Flat.
You're out of your head, Jess.
Take it easy, Jess. You're going to confess to that one, too. Then he had one of his gunslingers kill the blacksmith to shut him up.
What about Larimore?
Maybe you'd better ask him about that, Si. About the $15,000 Jess is paying him for the song he sang tonight. What about that, Jess?
I suppose I'm going to confess to that, too.
That's right. Now stand back, everyone, while we listen to Jess's confession. Johnny.
Yeah?
Pick up that red lamp and set it down next to the window over there.
The lamp? No! No, don't!
Okay. Easy, Jess. Just let us know when you're ready to talk. Over here, Johnny.
Admit you taught us a lesson we won't forget for a while.
I hope so, Si. The boys are running Larimore down to the jail.
Yeah, who's that gal out there with Johnny?
Larimore's sister. I expect she and Johnny have some talking to do. Jess.
Yeah?
We better get going. Sheriff will want to hear what you have to say. And besides, Smoke Bledsoe's looking forward to your company.
Smoke? In jail?
Been there since morning, Jess. Charged with killing the blacksmith. But I still got to hand it to you at that. Even though he wasn't out there waiting with his gun cocked, you sure sang a nice song.
Good
goodbye from Hopalong Cassidy. We hope you'll be back with us soon when Hoppy will again bring you more adventure and excitement. Hopalong Cassidy, starring William Boyd, is transcribed and produced in the West by Walter White, Jr. Range War was written by Harold Swanton. All stories are based upon the characters created by Clarence E. Mulford. This is a Commodore production.
As occasionally happened in westerns of the 50s, the perpetrator there was in line to win an entire valley if he could just run out those homesteaders. And Hoppy, with a little bit of furniture rearranging, manages to make the perpetrator sing by sitting him in a chair marked for an assassination. The name of our outing was Range War. It came to us from May 21st, 1950. Next up, a Mother's Day Dilemma for Phil Harris, as old-time radio drama continues here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.